Okay, folks, this is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and I can finally sleep. Yes, the infrastructure bill finally got passed, and I can sleep. I'm just very hopeful that that I-40 will be going to 12 lanes on each side, and that will make, you know, traveling across this great state of Tennessee a whole lot easier. You know, it's amazing how crowded things are, highways. I'm looking outside just 11E that runs right past my dealership. We've got about 35 to 40,000 cars a day passing right beside us. That's good. You know, and I don't know where all the bottlenecks are in this particular market, and the bad bridges and things that need improving. I know there's a lot of money. I think about $550 billion is actually fresh spending. The rest of it's stuff that we just needed to continue. So what's in it for the auto industry? Well, here you go. EV charging network. The bill sets aside $7.5 billion to help build a national network of electric vehicle charging stations. Won't that be just wonderful? The White House says the funds will be used to build EV chargers along highway corridors to facilitate long-distance travel and within communities to make charging more convenient. I wonder how many of them will end up in this area. Probably not many. But we'll see. Vehicle safety. There's legislation. It sets deadlines for the U.S. Department of Transportation to issue rules on automatic shutoff for keyless ignition systems. Updated headlamp standards, sorry. And a requirement for new vehicles to be equipped with drunken driving and impaired driving prevention technology. I think that's a really good thing. So every car will have a breathalyzer in it, or something to track your movements and your eyes. Maybe if you have the slow blink, that it will indicate that maybe you're a little bit inebriated. Who knows? But anyway, those are two things. Updating the electric grid is supposed to help. There's $65 billion in there for upgrades. This money will fund new transmission lines and support the development of demonstration and deployment of cutting-edge clean energy technologies. Whoopee. Let's see, looking forward, the House has yet to vote on the other one. You know, the other... It was, I think Bernie wanted it to be $6 trillion. They finally got it to $3 trillion. Now it's down to $1.75. I don't know what's going to happen, but I tell you what, there's a couple companies that aren't real happy about it because it includes a controversial additional tax credit for union-built EVs. So automakers that aren't unionized, such as Volkswagen in Chattanooga, and Toyota have, you know, they're calling foul. They're saying this is union-friendly and unfair. Well, imagine that. Imagine that somebody would want to do something to favor the unions. Why would they want to do that? I'll let you answer that question yourself. So moving on to greater things, let's talk about racing a little bit. The reason I want to is because I'm going to the Petit Le Mans. That is a race. It has nothing to do with lemons. It is a Le Mans, which is the big race, 24 hours. One of the biggest races, if not the biggest, most famous race in the world, is the 24 hours of Le Mans in where? That's right, France. And so they have something called the Petit Le Mans, and they do that at Road Atlanta. And that's just outside of Atlanta proper, kind of east on 85. I always go down through Asheville and down through Greenville, South Carolina, and then hit 85 and go down that way. But I leave on Thursday, taking my nephew and meeting my brother down there and his friends, and we watch racing for the whole weekend with the big event actually happens on Saturday, but it is a lot of fun. But I do want to talk something. Somebody asked me to explain a little bit about some of the racing, different types of racing that there are that's basically done in the United States. There's way more than I could get to, but I'll talk about the major ones here in just a minute. We'll be right back. Okay, let's talk racing, sports fans. You know, there's a lot of different types of car racing. It's always played a huge role in the auto industry. There was a time back in the 50s where a lot of people were, the cars were so much faster than the tires could handle, and a lot of people were getting killed. And so especially in auto racing, it was horrendous as far as Formula One and NASCAR and different things were just really, a lot of people were dying. So the federal government asked Ford and several of the companies, just stop it. Stop the racing. And so they did for a long time, but finally they realized how important racing was to the bottom line. So they started doing it again, and it's been, you know, racing has really led to a lot of the major safety advances that we have today. I mean, to seatbelt technology, analog braking systems, just brakes in general, handling packages that are available that make cars stick to the road, especially in the area of aerodynamics. It's had a huge impact on the way cars are designed and made them a lot safer. Made them last longer as well. You know, these endurance races are critical for automakers to test what works and what lasts and what doesn't last. So anyway, it's been a good thing. There are all different types of racing. One of the most recognized in the world is called open wheel racing. That's typically the first thing that comes to people's minds when they think about car racing. This is kind of like Formula One. IndyCar. These cars don't have fenders, okay? So that's what they mean, open wheel. The wheels are exposed. the races have drivers sitting in open-top cars, and even though the open-top cars now have become a little less open, they figured out in Formula One that we can save a lot of drivers if we put a little bar right in front of their heads. So they had to get used to having that right in the middle of their vision, but it has really made cars safer. Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that's open wheel racing. So there are some differences, though. IndyCar races on ovals and road courses where, you know, they have left and right-hand turns instead of all left or all right, while Formula One only races on road courses. Formula One is the granddaddy. That is the big kahuna. It's the one where there's more money in Formula One than just about anything else. I mean, just to have a basic Formula One team, it cost, just for 1 year, somewhere in the area of $100 million. Recently, Formula One agreed to a budget cap of $145 million in 2021. Because a lot of the teams just could not keep up. To give you a point of comparison, IndyCar, it hovers around $20 million for a IndyCar team. $20 million versus $145 million. So you can see what the difference
is. Thanks, Skip.
Formula E is a version of Formula One, except they race electric cars. It's come a long way since it came out. People are pretty interested in it because of the technology that's transitioning to the cars that we're driving every day. So Formula E, you can see those races a lot on Speed Channel. There are other versions of open wheel, like Formula 1000. They race with the Sports Car Club of America series. There are a lot of motorcycle racing and a lot of motorcycle engines in these SCCA race cars. So there's Formula 3. And then, you know, a lot of drivers get their start with go-karts. Now, these are not just, you know, not like the ones you ride at Pigeon Forge, okay? Get that out of your head. These are fast, like crazy fast. Some of the greatest, or really most of the greatest race car drivers, modern race car drivers, like from in the 70s, 80s, and beyond, started in karts, go-karts, because they learn a lot of skills and they start very young. So anyway, that is another form of racing. Sports car racing, that's different. It's really close to open-wheel racing as far as worldwide popularity. The series is probably the one racing series that's the most easily recognizable vehicles. They look like the cars that are on the streets. And they compete in something called the GT level, so Grand Touring. That would be cars like the Chevy Corvette, the Porsche 911, Lamborghinis and Ferraris. They race against each other. They will be racing at the Petit Le Mans when I go to the race this weekend. So, but one of the reasons I like this race so much is that imagine an IndyCar race that also had midget cars running around the track with them and a few stock cars thrown in. That's what sports car racing is. They'll have four different classes of cars racing at the same time. And when I say classes of cars, big differences in speeds and cornering ability that some of these cars can go. Now, the fastest cars in the sports car world are called prototypes. And these are cars that look nothing like anything on the street. They are the wildest looking cars, probably, other than some drag racing cars, that that you will see. Wild bodywork, high performance engine, pretty crazy looking designs. But a lot of the races are endurance races. Most of them are, as a matter of fact. You have the 24 Hours of Daytona. You may have heard of that. The 24 Hours of Nürburgring. That's one in Germany. The 24 Hours of Le Mans. And these races really do last 24 hours. And it's actually the most grueling test. Now, it's not just one car, one driver. You can have as many as four drivers in one car. They just take turns. And it's really interesting to watch that. And the races, now the Petit Le Mans is much shorter. That's why they call it Petit. It's actually, I think, a 10-hour race. But it's still an endurance race. Imagine a car having to last at top speed for that that kind of a time, and you can see why it's such a test. If you watch the movie Ford versus Ferrari, that was all based on winning Le Mans. And Ford was doing it with a Ford GT. Ferrari was racing with, I can't remember the number of the car that they were racing, but that is what we're talking about when we talk about sports car racing. So anyway. Touring car is another thing. It's very popular in Germany, United Kingdom, Netherlands, and Australia. The vehicles that are raced in this series are based on road-going production vehicles that are heavily modified. But unlike other race cars, there's little that differentiates the vehicles, so there's plenty of hard competition between drivers. These are cars that, pretty much street cars, that have a little bit of tweaks as far as power, but mostly the factory power with suspension changes and race tires. They are allowed to lower their cars and make a few changes, but it's very limited. And so the skill of the driver matters in everything, but it really matters a lot when the cars are still factory cars. Production car racing, these are pure production models, and it's a lot of fun to watch because these are showroom stock. It's very economical. As far as a way to race, you still have to have an SCCA racing license, which requires going to a school. But very lightly modified or unmodified vehicles race against other cars just like that particular brand. So, for example, the most successful racing class in the world is one of these classes, and it's called Spec Miata. This is where they race nothing but Miatas against each other. And the Miata has been, oh, such an incredible car. Over the years, came out in 1989 and basically took the British concept for sports cars, which was lightweight, manual transmission, perfect balance, you know, 50-50 weight distribution between the car, between the front end and the rear end, super handling, low to the ground, and basically perfected it. I would venture to say that the current Miata is probably the most perfect car made. That's saying a lot. And it's not because it has all this wizardry, you know, as far as technology and stuff like that. It's because it is the most perfectly balanced car. If you can, and I used to be a Mazda dealer for a lot of years and fell in love with this vehicle. I own a Mazda Miata, a 2017 model, a GT convertible. Most fun car that I have to drive. I'd much rather drive it than my Porsche. I have a 911, and the Porsche is an incredible car, but it's not a Miata. And if you were to get behind the wheel of one, you'd see exactly what I'm saying. The Spec Miata series, you know, they put numbers on the side of the cars, and they'll have sponsors sometimes, but they're all Mazdas. You cannot modify the engine. You can do a lot of safety. They have to have a roll cage built into it. There's some safety things. They take the seats out of them. They make them as lightweight as they possibly can. But the drivers are, you know, required to wear racing shoes and gloves and a helmet and a suit. It is actually, you know, next to karting, it's probably the most affordable type of racing. And then, of course, you have the stock car. Now, you might be scratching your head wondering what stock car racing is, but I doubt it. You've heard of it. It's known as NASCAR. And it's been America's most popular racing series since it became a thing in 1948. Moonshine runners during the Prohibition era made modifications to their vehicles to outrun the police. But they maintained their stock appearance on the outside. Well, once moonshiners started to enter national races with their vehicles, a new racing series was born. And things became official when a mechanic named William France formed the National Association for Stock Car Racing, thus NASCAR, in 1948. It united the drivers into a single series. Now, modern NASCAR vehicles wear massive sponsorships, funky paint schemes, enormous numbers. They still kind of resemble the cars that they're based on. I lost interest in NASCAR when they started racing Toyota Camrys. I'm sorry, but that was just too much for me. All NASCAR racing takes place on oval tracks. Well, not all of it. You know, sometimes they have some road courses. It's funny, the guys that are really good on road courses never win or seldom win on the circle tracks. It's a different skill set. They are all built on basically the same steel tube chassis. They utilize a 5.8-liter V8 engine and come with a 4-speed manual transmission. It's just different. They can race up to 500 miles. You know, you think about famous racetracks. I mean, what comes to mind when you think about NASCAR? Daytona, Talladega, Darlington, even our Bristol Motor Speedway. I've actually done the Richard Petty driving experience at Charlotte Motor Speedway one time. I got to do 30 laps, three 10-lap sessions in a real-live NASCAR race car with a suit on and a helmet and a Hans device and you name it. I got up to 165 miles an hour. I think my lap speed was like 155. And, you know, I wouldn't say I was scared. It had my attention for sure. And my first session was not near as fast as my third. But it was gave me a lot of respect for race car drivers because, you know, here I am going 165 miles an hour, and I'm on there by myself. Imagine having a car on either side of you, one in front and one behind, and all the air, you know, the way it plays with the aerodynamic changes, and somebody gets up on your bumper and you start banging against somebody else. It takes nerves of steel, I'm sure. Rallying is another interesting form of racing, and I'll get to that just right after the break. Okay, I'm back. You know, the last two forms of racing are very different. Rallying is more like, I don't know, kind of like you think about track and field, you know, when people run the mile run, you know, they go around in a circle and so forth. Rallying is like the marathon. Rallying is over real roads, and these drivers are crazy. I mean to tell you, they have to have nerves of steel. All the cars in rallying are all-wheel drive. Subaru, Renault, of course you may not be familiar with that. Ford is really big in rallying. These are all-wheel drive vehicles that literally fly on everyday roads, dirt roads. They ride in mud, sand, snow, ice. If you ever have a chance to watch, you can go probably to YouTube and just do rally races. You will not believe what you see. It is amazing that these people can do this. Great skill sets in that. But it differs from other areas of racing because you are not racing against other people on the track at the same time. You're racing against the clock, and you're trying to beat their times. And also, it's different because rallying cars have passengers. Yeah, there's somebody in there giving directions and calling out the turns and they are a critical person. Now, if you suffer from car sickness, you would not want to be one of those guys or gals. They tell the driver what's coming up, and they speak in code, and it takes a lot of practice. But it is called the World Rally Championship, and it's really something. Some of these little cars, little four-cylinder, 1.6-liter engines, have up to 600 horsepower. And when they go around a curve, they go around sideways. There have been a lot of spectators killed at road rally races, so it is kind of let's call it a full contact sport. I mean, that's basically what it is. And then the final form of racing I'll talk about is the oldest form of motor racing, and it's called drag racing. Drivers have always raced against one another in short drag races. I've even done it when I wasn't supposed to. I hope my mom's not listening. Drag racing may seem easy. You know, you rev the engine, wait for the light to turn green, and then floor it. But modern drag racing is far, far more technical than that. Timing, aerodynamic drag, grip on the road, brakes, stopping power, you know, they all play a role. We are blessed with a tremendous drag racing heritage here in East Tennessee with the Bristol drag strip up here, the Spring Nationals, and I don't even know what they call the races now, but it's all sponsored by the NHRA, the National Hot Rod Association. These cars get up to 330 miles an hour in a few seconds. Unbelievable. There's different classes. It's one of those races, one of those types of racing that the everyday man can get into. I know my service manager goes down to Rogersville. There's a little quarter mile racetrack down there that I don't know. There's just something about matching your skills in your car against somebody in the other lane. And, you know, Alan Johnson, you may have heard of that name. He's from Greenville, went to Greenville High School, and he is a world champion in drag racing and the pro stock class. He is a world champion, and he just recently retired. His dad was Roy Johnson and is Roy Johnson, still alive, and was the service manager at Towngate Ford for a lot of years. Alan was a racer. I think he drove Dodge products, but had an amazing career and did a great job. I was looking online and see pictures of he and his dad standing beside each other, but he owns 27 NHRA national event wins, and he has had a great career. So anyway, those are the different kinds of racing. We even have some local superstars. I know there are more out there that I have not mentioned, but sometimes we're just blessed in this industry to have something that's associated with it, like racing, to help us with technology and make things interesting on the weekends. What would we do without auto racing? Some of you would say, I'll do just fine. Well, we'll be back tomorrow for another edition of My Car Guru.